Bishman ben Shoki met of Nebuchadnezzar, but he put your devil is only for loose. So, as I said, it's possible that Ishbosheth felt that Avner would have come back to him, that he would have seen the light, and that he would have retracted his treason, done tshuva. But something prevented him from doing that, which was
being killed.
Right, he died. So that sort of put a damper in Ishbosheth's big plans. And the end result was that by Yishma Kimet Shaul, when he heard that Kimet Avner, when Avner died, then he really became afraid. Because without Avner, he knew that he had nothing. He had no strength, he had no ability, he had no followers. Avner was really the power behind his throne. He knew it. And at this point, he becomes exceedingly afraid. Typically, what happens to kings when they become afraid?
They don't last too long.
Remember Ahasuerus, he's fearful for his life. He recedes into his throne, into his kingdom, and he doesn't see visitors, and he's kind of just isolated. They become very paranoid and very isolated. And we'll see that that's exactly what happens to Ishbosheth. From here, I'm going to try to read through the entire parak, and then we'll come back and look at various pieces of the story. But I want to get a sense of what's over the rest of the story. Shnei anashim, sarei gdudim, hayu, ben Shaul, meaning im ben Shaul. There were two people who were with ben Shaul, two officers. Shem echad ba'ana, v'shem ha'shini rechav, b'nei rimon ha'be'eroti, b'nei binyamin. So you have two individuals, officers in Shaul's army. One's name is Ba'ana, the other's name is Rechav, sons of Rimon ha'be'eroti. From Binyamin, ki gam be'erot techashev al Binyamin, because be'erot is also considered part of Binyamin. But the Be'erotim had fled to Gitaim. And there they lived until today. All of this information have anything to do with the story. We'll come back to this. This is two important pieces we'll come back to. Uliyonatan ben Shaul ben Necheraglaim. Ben Chamesh Shanim Haya Bevo Shmuat Shaul V'Yonatan Mi'Israel. Yonatan ben Shaul, David's friend Yonatan, had a son who was a cripple. And what had happened was, going back in time, when he was 5 years old, and the news of Shaul and Yonatan's death from Israel had come, Atiseu Omanto Vatanos, his nurse, made, whoever was looking after him, had been carrying him and picked him up to flee. As she made haste to run, she fell, and he became wounded and therefore lame. Ushmo Mephibosheth. And his name was Mephibosheth. He plays no role whatsoever in this parak. Zero. So of course, why is he even mentioned here? That is the question. Vayechu b'nei Rimon. Back to our story. Vayechu b'nei Rimon abe'eroti rechavu ba'ana. These b'nei Rimon from Be'erot, by the name of Rechav and Ba'ana, they went. Vayavo k'chom ayom al beit Ishbosheth. And in the midst of the day, the heat of the day, meaning high noon, broad daylight, they entered into the house of Ishbosheth. And he was sleeping, he was taking a siesta. He was sleeping in the afternoon. We call that a siesta. They came into the midst of the house. This is a matter of extraordinary, of great difficulty in the Mefarshim. We'll come back to it. As though they were fetching wheat, meaning in disguise, says the Radak. We'll see other interpretations. Vayaku el achomesh, they smote him in the chest. Rechavu va'ana achiv nimlatu, and Rechavim Ba'ana, his brother, they ran away. Now when they came into the house and he was lying on his bed, they smote him, they killed him. They cut off his head. They took his head and they ran via the Arava, they ran via the Jordan Valley. From, remember, where are they physically? What city are they in?
Gittim or something like that.
Where?
That was Gilad. Isn't it Gilad?
No.
Gittim or something?
Where is Ishbosheth? Where is his kingdom? Where is his Malchus?
Oh,
in Benjamin, somewhere.
East of the Arden.
Oh.
City called Machanaim. Remember, that's where Avner had crowned him king in Machanaim, and then from there began to expand the territory around the land of Israel. But he is in Machanaim. He stays in Machanaim. And so they have to go from Machanaim, which is on the Yabok River on the east side of the Arden. They have to stay there. They have to get all the way from there to Hebron. I can pull up a map. Hang on a second. Let's see if I can find this map real fast. I had not prepared, but I will do so right now. Are you seeing the map?
No, nothing.
Okay, well, we will do it right now. Except that it's upside down. That's exactly right. Except that it's upside down. We can fix that. There we go. All right. So now you see the map?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So if this is, should be a map that should be familiar to you all. If this is
your dad, clear here.
This is Hebron down here. Everybody see it?
Yeah.
Do you see my mouse pointing?
Yes. Okay, yes, yes.
Good. Now, come up here to the Yabok River. That's the Yabok River over here. And right here along the Yabok River is Machanaim. So this is where Ishbosheth has been managing the Malchus of Malchut Yisrael, the tribes east of the Arden and the tribes north from Binyamin north. And Yavesh Gilad is somewhere over here as well. Remember that story that where they had come to bury Shaul's head? And this is where Machanaim is. This is where Shaul is. So when Rechav and Ba'ana kill Ishbosheth, they have to take his head down to Hebron. They take his head down Emek HaYarden, meaning down through the
Arava.
Down to the Arava, just down. It says that they
are they doing this for some kind of proof?
Yeah, well, we're going to come to why they do this in a second. Vayechud derech ha'arava kol ha'layla. So the Arava is this. The Arava is the Emek HaYarden, Jordan Valley, and that is where they head down south in order to bring this head to Hebron to David. All right, that brings us back to
text.
Let's go back to my other share screen, which is this one. All right. Ve'chud derech ha'arava kol ha'layla. Ve'yaviu et rosh Ishbosheth el David Hebron. They bring the head of Ishbosheth to David in Hebron. Ve'yamlu ha'malach, hinei rosh Ishbosheth ben Shaul oyivcha, asher bikesh et nafshecha. Behold, David, here is the head of Ishbosheth ben Shaul, your enemy, who sought your death. Yiten Hashem l'Adoni HaMelech nekamot hayom hazeh mishaul mizar'o. May God avenge the king this day of Shaul and his children. All right. So clearly Rechem and Ba'ana are less familiar with David's philosophical worldview than they should be. Had they had an inkling of who they were dealing with, they would have realized that this was a stupid thing to do. On two fronts. Number one, don't kill Ishbosheth. And number two, certainly don't go bragging about it to
David.
That is not going to end well. Yan David et Chavet Bana Achiv, Bnei Rimon HaBe'eroti. David responded to Rechav and Ba'ana, his brother, sons of Rimon HaBe'eroti, for the fourth time, I think. I'm going to come back to that phrase. They're all constantly referred to as Bnei Rimon HaBe'eroti. Unclear why. We'll see why. Vayomar Lehem, Chai Hashem Asher Padat Nashim Mikol Tzara. David takes an oath. By the living God who has redeemed me from all adversity. Do you remember the story of the guy, the Amalekite, who had come to just inform David that Shaul had died in battle, had no part in the role. Maybe he was participated in the mercy killing at the request of Shaul, maybe. Otherwise, he had no part. Just for telling me that Shaul had died. And he saw it as good tidings. I took him and I killed him in Siklag. Just for giving me the news, but for giving me the news as if he was singing about it. How much more so? That you wicked men, you evil, wicked people, who have taken a righteous person on his lying on his bed, innocent. In this case, righteous means innocent. I should not require this blood of your hands and take you out of this earth. In other words, you stupid people. You come bragging about having killed Ishbosheth to me. You don't think I'm going to kill you for it? David commanded his men, and they killed him. They killed Rechav and Ba'ana. They cut off their hands and feet. They hanged them by the pool in Hebron in public. That Rosh Ishbosheth lakhu vayikuru bekever avner b'chevron. But the head of Ishbosheth, they gave a state funeral to. They buried the head in the kever of Avner in Hebron. Which is ironic in a certain sense, that both Avner and Ishbosheth, both the king and the general of Malchut Yisrael, are buried in Hebron. It was David's capital. It also somewhat reminiscent of, and maybe the source for the Medrash, about the head of Esav, which is buried in Marat HaMachpelah. That Medrash, again, is not in the text. This is in the text that the head of Ishbosheth is buried in the Kavura of Avner, in the Kever of Avner. I think I mentioned before the notion that sometimes various stories in Tanakh become the foundation of Midrashim in Chazal elsewhere. Maybe there's a connection. Either as it may, Ishbosheth's head is given a royal burial, and Rechav and Ba'ana are literally hanged in public.
Why do we need such graphic detail?
Because Tanakh was not written for the soft-hearted and weak constitution. Tanakh was written for the details of what actually took place.
You want to say something?
These were challenging times and challenging people.
And the significance of the hands and the feet also.
Yeah, that I'm not 100% sure about. I don't think that there is... I Yeah. Impression don't the hands that did the action, the feet that came to run to David to tell him, punish the hands and feet. All right. Not exactly how we would handle life today, but that's all right.
That's okay. I hope not.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a lot of questions in this story. And just the process of the text is, and the sequence of the psukim are a challenge. First of all, there's elements in the story that seem to be totally irrelevant, and yet they keep getting, like, for example, the fact that Rechavim Ba'ana, B'nei Rimona Be'eroti. They're the sons of Rimona Be'eroti. How many times do I need to talk about the city that they came from? It came from Beirut, which was from Binyamin, and Beirut is considered part of Binyamin, but they had run to Gitaima, they were living there, so they weren't really in Beirut anymore. And then we come back to Rechavim Ba'ana later on. Bayan David Rechavet Ba'ana Achi B'nei Rimona Be'eroti. Why do I keep, what is the relevance of this constant refrain of them being B'nei Rimona Be'eroti? That's one question in the story. Another question in the story is the relevance of the reference to Mephibosheth. Where is it? Pasuk Dalet. V'liyontam ben shu ben necheh reglayim. Mephibosheth is a personality that will become important much later in the story. David has compassion on him. David takes him, virtually adopts him, cares for him. Kind of the orphan of Yonatan, but none of that's relevant now. Tiana's a question.
Yeah, I was wondering if it's relevant now because now that we know that Ishbosheth is dead, by knowing that Yonatan had a son, then we at least know that Shaul's line is not killed out.
Right, so that's possible. I'm going to come back to something along those lines at the end. But in the sequence of the story, it's an odd place to put it. At the very minimum, put it at the end. It's an odd place to put the story. We'll come back to that in a few minutes. So that's another problem in this parak. A third problem in this parak is the sequence of psukim hey and vav, or vav and zayin. Again, the same refrain as I mentioned before. It's a constant refrain. We'll come back to that. And they come into Ishbosheth's house. He's sleeping. They come into the house as fetchers of the wheat. They smelt him, and they ran. They escaped. They come into the house a second time, a third time. How many times did they come into the house? How many times did they enter the house? And they just killed him, and they escaped. And now they enter the house, and he's lying on his bed, and they killed him, and they took off his head, and they ran to David. So the whole thing is repetitive. That's also a problem. So let's tackle this story one piece at a time. Let's start with the question of the identity of these two people, Rechav and Ba'ana. Shnei anashim serei gdudim ayu ben Shaul, shem achad Ba'ana v'shem hashni Rechav, b'nei Rimona be'eroti mi'b'nei Binyamin, ki gam be'erot techashev al Binyamin. V'lechu ha'be'erotim gitayma v'yu shem gerim ad hayom hazeh. So this sequence of psukim is a mystery. Why do I need to tell, why do I need to know, number one, that they are from Be'erot, and the Be'erot is from considered part of Binyamin, they had run to Gitaima, what's going on here? So let's take a look first.
You not want explicit information. There's so many times you want explicit information. So why wouldn't you want it here? It's all explicit information.
I want to know what it means. It's true, but I need to know what it means. What is it telling me? Peirot mibnei Binyamin ki gam peirot chashev al Binyamin. What should also be considered as part of Binyamin? What does that mean?
That basically it's not part of Binyamin.
But that's a mystery. Because if you look at, I'm going to switch to another parak in Tanakh. Hang on a second. Let's go to Yeshua Parak Yud Chet Pasuk Chavhei. This is Yeshua Perek Yerchet. The cities that belong to Binyamin. So this is a list of all the cities of Binyamin. And if you look down at Pasuk Chav Hei, you will see that it very clearly lists Givon and Ramah and Beirot.
Oh, so this part of Binyamin.
Beirot is clearly a city in Shevet Binyamin. So this is a mystery. So if you take a look, for example, at the Radak.
This is very nice when you do this for us.
Thank you very much. I like this website, Al HaTorah. It's very convenient. It kind of gives it all to you on the...
I know, but you're turning all the pages. We don't have to do anything.
There you go. Hine Be'erot nechshevet b'toch harei Binyamin, says the Radak. Be'erot is considered part of Binyamin. Imkein mahu gam. It says ki gam Be'erot nechshev Binyamin. So the Radak says ulai ta al gvul. Maybe it was a border city, so it wasn't so clear. Ulai ta al gvul. Maybe some people thought it wasn't part of Binyamin. So we should know that it's also considered part of Binyamin. So we should know that all, and this is told to us, so we should know that this is a city in Binyamin, and that Binyamin was the tribe of Shaul. And from there, Shaul emerged. Okay. We'll come back to the Ishbosheth issue, to the Mifiboshet issue. So that's Doc's position, that it's a kind of a reference point to emphasize that, in fact, he is from Binyamin. And beyond that, not much to suggest. I'm going to come back to the text. And what it says is... Vishem Hashinu Yechav, there's a dog parking in the background somewhere. I'm not sure who's got a dog, but.
Sorry. I closed my window. I was hoping that would help. Oh, I got another window to close.
Okay, not a problem. It's an Israeli dog. It's all right. Kigam Be'erot Techashev al Binyamin. Be'erot is also considered part of Binyamin. Vayivrechu ha Be'erotim Gitaima. But the Be'erotites fled to Gitaim. Where does this come from? They fled to Gitaim. Who's fleeing to Gitaim?
Where is that anyway?
Right. So Gitaim is interesting. Gitaim is a machlokes where Gitaim, what Gitaim means. Some suggest it means Gat, which is others say it's a city called Gitaim, mentioned in Sefer Nehemiah. In either case, Gitaim is in the Eretz Plishtim.
So that's an interesting place to.
What is this relevant to?
Maybe that's why they thought, well, they weren't part of Nachmanus
Benjamin
anymore.
Rashi says, "Vayivrchu kishemet Shaul after Shaul's death, sh'azvu b'nei Yisrael ha'arim shesivot Plishtim, and the Israelites abandoned the cities near the Plishtim, as it said earlier, as b'chu ha'be'erotim." But they ran to Gitaim. Gitaim, they ran right into the heart of Eretz Plishtim. So why would they be running from the Plishtim? unclear, right? unclear. So here's a little, here's another picture. This city of Be'erot is listed amongst the tribes of, as the one of the tribes of Sheva Binyamin, one of the cities of Sheva Binyamin.
Right.
However, it has another story. And the other story it has is here, in Yeshua Perek Tet. Yeshua Perek Tet, anybody have any recollection what the story of Yeshua Perek Tet is?
No.
No.
I said the same thing. No.
It's pretty early. Is it about Rafa?
No. Giv'onim. Yoshvei Giv'on shamu at asher asah Yoshua l'Yericho v'la'ai. When the inhabitants of Giv'on heard what Yoshua had done to Yericho and Ai, v'yasu gam hem ha'be'oma, v'yachu v'yitztayaru, v'yikhu sakim balil l'chamoreham, v'nodot yayim balim, v'mukaim v'mitzorim v'na'alot balot. They came and they disguised themselves as if they came from a faraway journey, and they came to Yoshua in Gilgal, and they said to him, we're not from this land, we're not from Eretz Yisrael, we're from a faraway land, we want you to make a bridge with us. Now, do you remember the story?
Yeah.
Remember the story of the Givonim. Vayamu ish Yisrael ala chivi, they were chivites, they were actually localites, they were part of the land of the chivi. But, maybe you're part of us. And they said, no, we're from far away. They make a whole bridge with them. Then after the breed, they discovered that this whole thing was a ruse, and that they really were, in fact, local. But nonetheless, they decided to keep the breed with them, because otherwise it would have been a terrible chilul Hashem. 3 days after they came and they saw that they had made a breed with them, they saw that these Givonim were they were neighbors. They were close by. So the Israelites came and they journeyed to their cities, the cities of the Givonim. And they found the Arehem. What were the cities of the Givonim?
Givon,
Fira, Be'erot, Be'kiryat Yearim. So Be'erot was a city assigned to Sheva Binyamin, but it wasn't really ever part of Sheva Binyamin because it was one of the cities of the Givonim. That may in fact explain why they are referred to as Bnei Rimon HaBe'eroti. Maybe. This is now in the world of conjecture. B'nei Rimon HaBe'eroti. Show you an interesting reference. Ramed Perek Hey.
Why does this seem more complicated than a lot of other stories?
It doesn't. It's just a more complicated technology.
So
this is a story in, it's easy when you're actually flipping pages in the Tanakh, because then you get a sense of perspective what part of Tanakh you're in. Like this, it's just a blank screen. Everything looks the same. But all right.
You're right.
Malachim Bet Perakei, this is a story we haven't even come close to. It's Elisha and Naaman, but nonetheless, in that story, he says, the Devar Zeh Yislach Hashem Lavdecha Bevo Adoni Bet Rimon Lishtachavot Shama. Ishtachaveti Beit Rimon. This Naaman, the king of Naaman Sar Tzva Melech Aram, he's the general in the army of Aram. He's referring to Elisha, and he's to have a whole conversation with Elisha. Elisha heals him from his tzaraat, and he swears loyalty to God. But then he says to him, "Yeah, I'll swear loyalty to God, but I first have to finish my duties to my God." And I have to go and participate in some national ceremony in the temple of Rimon. Now, it's just interesting that in our story, Rechav and Ba'ana are constantly referred to as
Bnei
Rimon HaBe'eroti. Now, it could be a total coincidence, but this Rimon is the name of a Canaanite idol. the deity. Not uncommon if you are not an Israelite to have a name associated with a with a deity of a foreign power or a foreign nation. Israelites typically not refer to a child by the name of Rimon. In the context of the Canaanite names of the Canaanite deities, that would be complex. But here, v'shem ha'shini v'chav b'nei Rimon ha'be'eroti. So if Be'erot is in fact one of the cities of the Givonim, that would also explain why v'yivchu ha'be'erotim gitayma. Why would it explain that they ran to Gitaim?
Because it's sounding like they're not Jews at all.
Correct. They're not.
They're part of Plishtim.
Well, the Givonim are a complicated people because they are Canaanites. We made a brit with them. They don't convert. They're not Gerim. They are Canaanites. They just, we allowed them to remain in the land. They gave them a service in a role a kind of a service role in the Mishkan or in the temple in the days of Shlomo HaMelech, so that they could remain a kind of a part of the people. But they have a very complex relationship with Malchut Yisrael. Why do they flee to Gitaim? So the Mefarshim suggests it was after the death of Shaul. Maybe they became afraid. Maybe. Share another possibility.
Well, I was wondering if, you know, they feel like somebody's going to come after them to arrest them or kill them because they killed the king. So they're going to run to
the question is, when do they run to Gitaim? Is it now, or is it a reference to an event that had occurred earlier?
Maybe, yeah.
Okay. So, for example, I'll give you an example. Let's take a look at this. We're going to come back to this story at length, but not today. But I want to just mention it. This is Shmuel Bet Perek Habalef. This is a perek we haven't gotten to yet. It's the end of the Sefer. But I mentioned before that the last couple of prakim of Shmuel Bet are really early prakim. How early, that we will assess. But earlier. So in the days of David, when some point in time there's a famine for 3 years. David sought God's understanding. Why is there a famine? God answered, El Shaul ve'el Beit Hadamim, al asher hamit et hagivonim. It is a retribution for Saul and the blood of his house for having persecuted or killed the Givonim. Now, this is a story we haven't seen. We've learned all of Sefer Shmuel Aleph and beginning of Shmuel Bet. We have seen much of the story of Shaul. We have not seen the story of when Shaul killed the Givonim. But it is mentioned right here. So the consequences of that story we'll see. But if I come back to our perek, if in fact Bnei Rimon, if these two, Rechav and Ba'ana, are Bnei Rimon HaBe'eroti, are Giv'onim from Be'erot, who had fled to Gitaim, when did the Be'erotim flee to Gitaim?
Probably when Shaul tried to kill them.
The logical context is when Shaul was killing all the Giv'onim, they fled. And they fled to who is the enemy of my enemy is my friend. If Shaul is killing all the Givonim, who do you flee to?
Plishtim.
So they ran to Gitaim. Now suddenly, the motivation behind Rechav and Ba'ana to kill the last remaining son of Shaul takes on a whole new meaning.
Yeah.
Right? Uh-huh. You've got two Givonim from Be'erot, by the name of Rechav and Ba'ana, Bnei Rimon, Who killed Ishbosheth? I don't know. Givonim killing Ishbosheth ben Shaul doesn't sound like it's a matter of altruistic motivation to unite the kingdom under the flag of David. Maybe it is, but maybe it's also a little bit mixed with a sense of revenge for what Shaul had done to the Givonim. That is not an escape. That should not escape our attention. So this role of these Bnei Rechavim Ba'ana, the fact that they are Givonim, that's a story that we're going to have to explore. What role the Givonim played, what happened in Perek of Aleph, is it relevant to our Perek? It's a very, very dark Perek, Perek of Aleph, but nonetheless, one that I think dovetails straight into this story. And we will have to come back to it. Janet had a question.
Yeah, it might explain why they wanted to kill the grandson. Explain why they keep saying that they're part of Shevet Benjamin.
Right. So considered part of Benjamin, I would assume, because Beirut was
the original breed or something.
It was originally part of Benjamin, but it was Givonim. But boundary-wise, it would have been included in the area of Benjamin, and even though it was a Givon city, they would have been annexed, if you will, into the tribe of Benjamin. So that's the language here. Techesheva Benjamin, because it was really a Givonis, it was really a city of the Givonim.
Okay. Do we know how large the Givonim were? I mean, were they really huge, small, medium?
No. We don't, nor do we know on the face of it why Shaul killed them. That's also part of the mystery. When we get, we're going to learn, we're going to do the prakim out of order. We're going to go from this parak to parak of Aleph and then come back to this parak because I need to know, we need to learn parak of Aleph to understand the background to what's going on here. But certainly it gives us an inkling into, or a picture into a motivation behind Rechavim Ba'anaz actions that go beyond just loyalty to David, if they even had loyalty to David in the first place, or if they weren't being motivated by some ulterior motivation, like revenge. All right, let's skip the story of Mephibosheth for a moment and come to the sequence of events here in Pesukim Hey, Vav, and Zion. This is really a mystery. What happened in these three Pesukim? How many times did they enter the house? It says they entered the house three times, right? I don't know how many times you enter a house. Then it says, and how many times do you kill the same person? And they killed him. So they killed him. How many times you have to kill? Now, how many times you have to escape? They escape in Perek Vav. They escape in Perek Zayin, in Pasuk Zayin. So, this is a mystery. Hang on a second. Let's close this. All right. This is a mystery. So let's take a look at what the Mefarshim do with this. Let's take a look at Pasuk Vav. Vinei ba'o atoch ha'bayit lokhe chitim, v'yakur el ha'chomesh v'lechav ha'bana achiv nimlatu. So Rashi says, Vinei ba'o atoch ha'bayit im tagarim lokhe chitim. They entered into the house. What is this lokhe chitim? They entered into the house with Lokhechitim, with kind of tradesmen, with the sellers in wheat sellers, salesmen. What are they doing? Rav Yosef Ka, Rav Marie Karo, Mayinei Bawa Tochabayit, Ki'ilu Lokhechitim. A little bit of a different twist, but to the same message, they came in as if they were Lokhechitim. Similarly, what does that mean?
They're pretending to be part of the locals.
So it's a disguise.
Yeah.
It's a disguise. They come in, they need to disguise themselves. They come in as if they are as if they are zamanei kisid.
Tradesmen.
They need to disguise themselves. Why do they come twice? Why do they come twice? Look at the radak. Nira'a ki achar shehikuhu, after they killed him, vayetzu lehem, right? In Pasuk Vav it says that they smote him and then they ran. They escaped, correct?
Mm-hmm.
His Pasuk says, they escaped in Pasuk Vav. And then, vayavo abayit in Pasuk Zion. So the Radak says, nir'ah, ki achar shehiku, it would seem that after they killed him, vayetzu lehem, and they left, chazru labayit, they returned to the house. Why did they return to the house? Lasir et rosho, because then they came up with a brilliant plan. Oh, let's take his head down to David. In other words, they come into the house, they kill Ishbosheth, then they go back to the house to cut off his head and run, and to bring it to David. They thought, oh, David would be very pleased. So why do they do it in two stages?
Where is everybody?
Excuse me?
Where is everybody? These guys are coming and going and killing and cutting, and where's the whole household and the guards and stuff like that?
Yeah, that's a good question. That is a very good question. And on top of it, why did they have to go in twice?
They're on lockdown.
Why didn't they just cut his head off when they were there the first time?
Maybe it was a second thought.
Oh,
right.
That's what the Radak seems to think, that it was the first time they came in to kill him, and then they said back, oh, you know what, we could get some money out of David for this, or we could get some loyalty out of David for this. It supports the theory that, in fact, the motivation behind Rechav and Ba'ana in killing Ishbosheth may not have been David. Right, it supports the theory that being that they were givonim, that maybe they killed Ishbosheth because of their own interests, meaning revenge for what Shaul had done to the givonim. And then only afterwards do they realize, again, according to the Radak, they went in twice, that only afterwards they realize that maybe, oh, you know what, if we take his head down to David, maybe David will, maybe he'll give us some kind of reward for it. In other words, there's two stages here, because they're really motivated by two different factors. The primary motivation was actually not nationalistic at all. Primary motivation may have been vengeance for what Shaul had done to the Givonim. That's why they killed him in Pasuk Vav. And then only in Pasuk Zayin do they realize, oh, you know what, we could get something from David for it. Let's go back and take his head off.
But this means that this is all the same time period, that these correct. Givonim were the same people, I mean, all the same time period. These weren't years later or anything.
Well, Yeshua's Shaul's actions against the Givonim is more or less the time. How many different time periods are there to Shaul? It's the same Shaul.
This is 3 years.
All of Sefer Shmuel Aleph is in the time period of the 7 years. So, yes, it's all in the same time period. Now, there's another possibility, and I mentioned it only by as a kind of an aside. I don't have it here in the Mefarshim. I don't see it mentioned here at all. It's not mentioned. Let's see if it's in the rest of it. No. No. So I'm going to read to you a translation from, referred to as the Targum Shivim. Targum Shivim was a Greek translation of Tanakh that was done many, many years later. It's not the same as the famous story of the translation of Chumash into Greek for the part of the Shivasa Batamos sequence. But there is this a Greek translation of Tanakh called Targum Shivim. It's referred to by Josephus a lot. And this pasuk that we are dealing with reads differently. It says the following. I didn't have it on. I thought it was here on the Al Torah. It's not. So I'm just going to read it to you. You know what? I'll type it for you. You all see the whiteboard?
Yes.
This is what the Targum says. Whoops.
Oop, you erased it. You erased it.
Disappeared.
You erased it.
No good. I'll do it again. Dine sho'eret habayit chitim. Sorry, bararach chitim. Vatanom vatishan, rechavu vana achiv nimlatu. Which means, what is a sho'eret habayit?
It's me.
The doorkeeper?
Right, the gatekeeper. That's what you asked before, Janet, about the guard.
Everybody.
Okay, sho'eret habayit, the guard. The guard of the house, the sho'eret. She was sifting her wheat that day. Barachitim. Vatanom. She fell asleep. Vatishan. Rechubanachim Nimlatu. And so Rechav and his brother Nimlatu escaped. They didn't escape from the house. They escaped into the house. Meaning that they were escaped the eyes of the guard. And they managed to therefore get in. They got into the house. Why? Because the lokhei chitim was sleeping. Skip this phrase, ve'ikul achomesh, that comes later. Now, it's not the same text or the same pshat, but it gives sort of another angle or a different perspective on what happened in this case. And then ve'yavo abayit. And they were able to, in one fell swoop, cut off his head and run to David. So it's just a different perspective on how it all came down.
Really?
Is that a question?
I have the art scroll, Shmuel.
Uh-huh.
And it says the Radak says that they were commanders in Shaul's army.
Yes.
And that's why
I said earlier that they are commanders in Shaul's army, which would make the need to disguise themselves more complex, right? Why would they need to disguise themselves? I meant to mention that, right? They were, it says it earlier. They were soldiers in Shaul's army. Or in Ishbosheth's army. So why would they need to disguise themselves to get into Shaul's house or Ishbosheth's house? Unclear. Maybe Ishbosheth's gone paranoid and he's not letting anybody in. But that would fit the description of the Targum that they weren't trying to disguise themselves, but they were rather escaping past the eyes of the guard, if you will. Possibly. All right. Which leads us to the last two issues. Number one, what were they expecting David's reaction to be?
Positive.
He'd be happy about it.
They weren't expecting to be killed. That was for sure.
Right. They're certainly not expecting to be killed.
They're expecting a reward.
Right. The question is, why do they really think that David would have been so happy to have Ish-bosheth killed? It could be as simple as the fact that most people on the outside perceive David and Ish-bosheth or David and Shaul as enemies, in the same way that the Amalekite came and told David about the death of Shaul, thought that David would be happy. This is the same kind of context. The only problem is that these things are usually not quiet. And if David's reaction to the death of Shaul and Kinat David, etc., was so public, why would they think that David would be so happy at the death of Ish-bosheth? Maybe 7 years later, after civil war and much blood has been shed, maybe he thought that Ish-bosheth was really an enemy. That's possible. It's also possible that the death of Avner has something to do with it. Back to the first pasuk. Vayishma ben Shaul ki met Avner b'Chevron, vayirku yadav b'cho Yisrael nivhalu. The death of Avner is a factor in this whole parak. So why would the death of Avner play a role here in the information these two people are bringing to David?
Because Yoav killed him. Because Yoav killed Avner. And Yoav was associated with David.
Yeah, but David had gone through this whole public ceremony to demonstrate that he had remorse, that he didn't have anything to do with it. That he rejected Yoav's actions.
But he still was his army, no?
Excuse me?
He still stayed the head of his army for a while, no?
So yeah. That we talked about last week. That we alluded to last week, that maybe he let him go. Not clear. Mm. Not clear. Yeah. Maybe some suggest that that's true. That most of us think that he kept Yoav as head of the army, and that led to a kind of a mixed message as far as Yoav is concerned, or as far as Avner is concerned. The other possibility is simply that not everybody bought David's remorse. Not everybody bought the theory that David did not have anything to do with the death of Avner, or even that even if they did buy his remorse, it could be that the reason why he was so remorseful and why he was so upset about the death of Avner was because Avner had already changed sides. Avner was killed after he had already come to David as an offer of changing sides.
Yeah.
Which means that it could be that David's mourning and public demonstration of remorse and distance for Yoav is all because Yoav killed Avner after Avner had come to his side. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't change how it was viewed from the perspective of Ish-bosheth. It could be that Ish-bosheth, and in this case, the two generals in his army, thought that David was still considered Ish-bosheth an archenemy, and would have been very happy to have Ish-bosheth's head as a trophy on his shelf. At least they offered the head as a trophy on his shelf. That didn't go very far. Clearly, that was not the case. And we end with Ish-bosheth's head being buried in Avner's kever in Hebron. All right.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
The Ark Scroll also says that maybe these two guys thought that they could replace Avner as a high general in David's army. So they were trying to curry favor with David.
Yeah, it's possible that that's I don't remember if that's in the
Mephoshim. I don't know where they get that from.
I don't know where that comes from. I don't see it in the maybe.
Yeah, it doesn't give a source.
Yeah.
Art scroll doesn't.
Say. All the Radak says, Yehem hargu ki chashvu limtzachem b'enei David b'zeh davar. They thought they'd find favor in David's eyes in this matter. Doesn't say beyond that why.
Right.
We are in the world of conjecture. I want to come back to Mephibosheth for a minute. Well, what did I do? I went too far. I'm going to come back to Mephibosheth. Yonatan ben Shaul ben Necher Eglayim ben Chamesh Shanim Haya Bevo Shmuat Shaul Yonatan Yisrael Bat Yisrael Omanto Batanos Vahi Bechovza Lanus Vahipol Vahipaseach Ushmo Mephibosheth. Yonatan had a son 5 years old at the time of the battle in Emek Yisrael. His nursemaid picked him up to run. She thought the police were going to attack further, so she decided to run. She fell, and he became crippled. The question is, what is the relevance of this story here? Why is this mentioned in Perek Gimel? So let's take a look at the Mefarshim. Rashi. Whoops, let's see if I can get Rashi. Just select Rashi. Come on. There you go. Uliyanatan ben Shaul. Mone v'olech ech nishbet malchut bet Shaul. The text begins to enumerate how the house of Shaul eventually was destroyed. Hu v'nav nergu. Shaul and his sons were killed. This one last child, Yonatan's son, Ishboshet ben Shaul, hargu amishkavo, was killed lying on his bed. And Yonatan's son had fallen and became a cripple. Necheraglaim, Rashi translates as shvoraglaim, he broke his leg and he couldn't walk on. So, according to Rashi, the reason for this reference, or the reason for this discussion of Mephibosheth here, is
to enumerate what happened in the house of Shaul.
Right. It's part of the enumeration of the disintegration of the house of Shaul. Yonatan, his brothers, Shaul and his 3 sons died in battle. Yonatan's son was a cripple. And the last remaining relevant child was Ishbosheth. And now Ishbosheth's going to die in his bed. Take a look at the Mitzvah David, slightly different approach. Kavanat HaBe'erotim, the reason why this reference or this story is here is because Kavanat HaBe'erotim, the intent of the Be'erotim, who are the Be'erotim?
Ba'anah and the other guy.
Right, Rechav and Ba'anah. Right, B'nei Rimon. When they killed Ishbosheth, their intent had been David, in order to strengthen the kingdom of David. Because of the seed of Shaul, there's no one left. They thought Mephibosheth certainly could not be appropriate for the kingdom. Because you can't have a king, general, warrior, who is a cripple, who can't walk. So the reference to Mephibosheth in this parak, says the Radak, says Mitzvah David, is to give us a sense of why they killed Ishbosheth. There's no one left. If you look at the sequence of events, Rechav and Ba'ana are 2 generals in the army of Shaul. Yonatan's son is a Necher Eglayim, so they go and they kill Ishbosheth. Meaning, there's no one left. Ishbosheth's a nobody. Ishbosheth's a weak link. Ishbosheth is after the death of Avner. Ishbosheth clearly is unfit to reign. Who's the only other remnant child of the house of Shaul? Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth's not fit to reign either, because he's a Necher Eglayim. And so they have no choice but to run to
David.
David.
So that is a, so that's sort of the approach of the Mefarshim. And I think that that's all very, I think that that's really the pshat on the parrot. But there's a third piece of it that is not necessarily the primary intent of the parrot, but nonetheless, a consequence of the message. I think it's a very powerful side issue, which is that by mentioning Mefiboshet, if we just read this pasuk, if we read this parak without Mefiboshet, take this pasuk out. Okay? Take this pasuk out completely. Get rid of this. There we go. Vayivruchu abeirotim, so you start with B'nai Rechavim Ba'ana, Sarei Gedudim, in the army of Ishboshet. They go and they kill Ishboshet, they run to David. How many sons does Shaul have? In total?
Four.
Three died in battle, and the fourth dies?
Here.
Which basically means that after the death of Ishboshet, the house of Shaul is?
Finished.
And that's the impression, if I didn't have Pasuk Daled, the impression the parak leaves me with is, the house of Shaul is finished. Mm-hmm. And that everything that Shaul represented, essentially, is gone. The only remnant left is Michal, and Michal is married to
David.
By throwing in the story of Mefiboshet, I have a hint to the fact that even after they kill Ishboshet, there's still a survivor. And the survivor is Mefiboshet. Now, that's not much of a survivor in the language of Tanakh, and in the frame of reference of Tanakh, Mefiboshet is not much of a survivor. Correct?
Right.
Except, and now I'm going to bring you to Divrei Hayamim. Divrei Hayamim Perek Hey. Oh, where is it? Perek Kaf. This is a list of the children of descendants of Shaul. And I'm going to come back down to the bottom of this Perek.
I'm learning that parak with Shani Terrigan at Matan.
There you go. B'ner holidet Kish, B'kish holidet Shaul, B'Shaul holidet Yonatan, but Malkishua. Who's Malkishua? Et Abinadab, et Eshbal. Who's Eshbal?
Ishboshet.
Ishboshet. Remember we talked about Baal and Boshet is interchangeable. Mm. Right? Ben Yonatan Meriv Baal. Ben Yonatan Meriv Baal. Who's Meriv Baal?
Mefiboshet.
Mefiboshet. Correct? Mefibaal, Mefiboshet, Meriv Baal. So Ben Yonatan Meriv Baal. Meriv Baal, Holidet Micha. Uvne Micha, Piton, Malach, Batarea, Ve'achaz. Ve'achaz, Holidet Yoada. Yoada, Holidet Alamet. That as Mavet. That Zimri, Zimri holidet Motza, Motza holidet Binah, Rafa beno Elasa beno Atzel beno, Ulatzel shisha banim ve'elish motam, Azriken b'chorov v'Yishmael Shaiyah v'Ovadiah v'Chanan kol ele bnei Atzel, bnei Eshek achiv ulam b'chorov Yehuz hasheni ve'Lifelet hashlishi. Now, this is Divrei Yamin. Divrei Yamin loves lists. Divrei Yamin is full of lists. What's relevant to us is that all of these children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren are all descendants of whom?
Binyamin.
Mefiboshet. They're all descendants of Mefiboshet. That grandson of Shaul mentioned in Perek Daled. All descendants of Mefibaal of Mefiboshet. Now look at this pasuk.
This says Binyamin.
Vayu b'nei ulam. All of these sons, Achiv, Ulam, Bechorol, all sons of Mefiboshet. Gibore Chayil, Torche Keshet, Umabim, Banim, Uvnei Banim, Me'av HaChamishim, Kol Eile, Mivnei Binyamin, like the tribe of Binyamin. But descendants of Mefiboshet. Descendants of Mefiboshet described as Gibore Chayil, Anashim, Gibore Chayil, Torche Keshet. Why is that interesting? Because those are exactly the descriptions of Shaul and Yonatan. Giborei Chayil, Giborim, Kinat David, went over and over and over again. The descriptions of Shaul and Yonatan is Giborim, and Dorech Keshet, Yonatan, Keshet Yonatan Lanasagachor, that the bow of Yonatan did not tarry. All the descendants of Mephibosheth carried the qualities of Shaul and Yonatan. So the irony of the story is that the house of Shaul continues. And it continues into a long, proud lineage of warriors, of soldiers, of people of strength and stature, not kings necessarily, but people of strength and stature. And they all continue through Mephibosheth. So I come back to the story in Perek Daled. Here's Yonatan, here's Rechavim Bana plotting to kill Ishbosheth and end the reign of this descendants of Shaul.
It's not.
Into this little story is inserted the fact that you should know Yonatan has a son. His name is Mephibosheth. We're going to plant him over here. And now just watch. Keep an eye on him. Because time will turn around. And eventually Mephibosheth is going to be the progenitor of a long and proud lineage of Anashim Gibore Chayil, Dorechei Keshet Gibore Chayil. Fascinating turn all the way of the circle back to the world of Shaul and Yonatan. So I just thought that was an interesting connection that add an additional dimension to why these two people are mentioned. All right, we're going to adjourn here. And Bezrat Hashem, after Pesach, when we reconvene, either in person or in Zoom, so we will resume in Zoom. Now you got it. We will pick up on this question of the role of the Givonim in the death of Ishbosheth and how it connects to Perek Chof Aleph and Shaul's actions against the Givonim, whether that plays a role here, and if so, how that is expressed. So we'll pick that up as Bezrat Hashem in a couple of weeks' time. For now, have a chag kasher bari v'sameach. Have a wonderful, healthy, good Pesach.
And we will same to you.
Thank you.
Same to you.
Thank you. It was wonderful learning with you again.
Jan, chag sameach.
Great to see you.
Jan, you know what? When we go back to shul and we start learning in the Beis Medrash, I'm just going to stick an television screen up and we're going to Zoom in. Anybody wants to join us?
Okay. Yeah, I'm getting to be in join lots of classes that I can't otherwise. So this is
there
fun.
There you go. There's a silver lining in it.
Silver lining, right. Exactly.
Okay. Bye.
The sequence.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you.
Good to see you all. It's nice to see you.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye.